Movers, shakers, makers. What makes creative people tick, and how do they find and develop their inspiration? Welcome to the podcast that draws back the curtain on the inventive mind and its artistic process. I'm Emma Lister. Gabriela Munoz is a performing artist born in Mexico City, a city she has now returned to after having trained in London and working all over the world. As her clown persona, Chula the Clown, she has devised, directed, and starred in three full-length works, Limbo, Dirt, and Perhaps, Perhaps, Quizás, which won her Outstanding Performer at the New Zealand Fringe and has been performed internationally, from Sweden to Australia, China, Brazil, and New York. She is a frequent performer in other artists' work and for over a decade has been involved with charitable organizations that bring laughter and relief to people suffering in places of crisis around the world. I'd like to start by describing my impression of Chula the Clown. She has a very obviously painted white face, and she has defined eyebrows that are in kind of like a questioning or quizzical look. She has a little heart drawn as a little pout in her mouth, lots of black hair. She's generally, I would say she's not wearing contemporary clothing. There's almost like a period feel to most of the clothes that I've seen her pictured in. And certainly the character relies hugely on physicality for her storytelling, and it really makes me think of silent film, and I wondered whether you watched a lot of silent film growing up or if it influenced you at all.
No, actually, I have very little references to silent movies, but because I started speaking at a very late age, I would communicate with sounds from a very early stage. So my it goes back to old memories, but my mom was studying medicine when she started when she was 30. So we were very, very young when she was like a full-time student. And my dad had no work, so he would stay at home with us. And at that time, a friend of his had lent him a Beta or a VH, no, I think it was a Betamax camera. So he had to spend time with us while my mom was off in college or studying. So my dad decided to write scripts for us and film us. And he gave us characters and names and everything, and would dress us up with my mom's clothes. And it was pretty much for his entertainment, because I couldn't speak. I wouldn't speak. So I would just come in and start doing sounds. So he would just have a laugh and tell me like, no, but you forgot, like you have your words, you have your dialogue, you need to speak. And I would just like reply to him, like we had a conversation, but mine was based on sounds. And instead of pushing me to talk, then he pushed me to the other side. He would create things where I would still feel that awkwardness and react with sound. So I think that was mainly his inspiration, how I got really inspired after many, many years and studying and everything. It all made sense. Like when I thought about it and went like, ah, yes, that's exactly how what I would express myself when I was a kid.
When did you first encounter what we would understand is a clown, or a performance that involves clowning? Were you drawn to it in a way, or did you go into performing arts in it and you ended up down the path of becoming this clown character?
I think it was very much an instinctual, is that how you say it? Instinctive approach. Because I did know I wanted to be on stage, and performing arts as a general meant like that I could really find my expression. But I tried many things before I really found clown actually found me. I had no idea. I, as I say, I had no references of clowns. I wasn't a big Charlie Chaplin or Buster Keaton fan at all. I knew, of course, and I had seen some of their films, but I was never like a fan of this art form at all. And then basically when I went to school and we started doing clowning, I sort of felt I had found my my sense of belonging in a way. It was not like, oh, I found my profession, but like, ah, finally my awkwardness has an outlet that is well received. Like, people are okay with my existence, with my awkward existence. And then they told me, oh, by the way, that's called clowning. So it was like, oh, okay. Well.
So you found it before you knew how to define it.
Yeah, exactly.
You were talking about playing sort of dress up with your mom's clothing early on with your dad and I presume your siblings or sibling. And it strikes me that Chula there's a layer of obvious dress up and artifice to her still. So sometimes when you paint the face, there's a very obvious white line, almost as though it is a mask actually. And it's very much a dress up. So you're not trying to conceal the artifice always in when you take on that character. Can you talk a bit about how you developed her persona, the way she looks?
Yeah, basically, I've always had a relationship with past times or past lives in a way. That's always been a fascination to me. And that's also, I think, why my relationships with very old people have always been the richest. And I love having conversations with very old people and just listen to their stories. I can spend lots of time doing that. I have very, very good friends that are very old. And there's a very nostalgic part in me that maybe lived in that era, in my past lives. So there's a foot that's standing in that sort of period, but I know completely, I'm not that crazy yet to believe that I live in that era. So I'm very conscious that it's 2020. So that's how I started also creating this character and thinking about the decadence of someone in between worlds, I guess, but also in many layers, like the dualities of emotions, of periods of time. Like, it's, I think my whole research is drawn by duality. And then I remember first painting white just because I wanted like this phantasmagorical or ghostly figure of a woman that had been waiting so long. I was also reading Dickens' Great Expectations time. Miss Havisham.
Well, yeah. Done. Oh, okay. So the woman waiting for in her wedding dress in the old house and waiting for the wedding that does not occur. I see. It's quite dark, actually.
It's super dark. Yeah, I love that. I love that thing in my head. It's my head is also quite dark.
The first piece you made as Chula the Clown was perhaps quizás. And if I could just summarize it for the listener, you play a woman who dreams of Mr. Right, and she's dressed as a bride, and she enacts lots of bride-like things like walking down the aisle, singing the wedding march, she consumes a wedding cake, and she eventually decides to enact the ceremony itself with several audience members, but one in particular. And it occurred to me that there's several layers of creation and reality at work. There's your clown character, Chula, and Chula is cast as the character Greta, who is play-acting at being a bride. And she, in turn, gets the audience to act out a wedding. I just wondered if you could tell me a bit more about how you developed the concept of the piece and how you kept all those balls in the air.
I think, as I said before, that when I defined, or I was told that what I was doing was clowning, there was no sort of rules. I just knew I wanted to tell this story because I was going through a breakup that led me to think, oh, like in my culture at least, how many women really think that the external figure of love is a man, and that will fill all the voids that you have. So after 30, of course, you're a spinster if you haven't yet met that right person. So I saw lots of people just getting married just to check the box. So of course I started playing around that, and then I understood that there were so many layers of stories that were hidden between the lines, and then revealed to me as, okay, so it's not only like gender-based, it's not talking about women, it's talking really about humans trying to connect. It also talks about self-love and self-esteem. It talks about behaviors that you do on your own, that you're like eating the cake in your underwear, knowing that, okay, if I'm on my own, I can do it. I can just be lazy and be there and show my fats and nobody cares. But the moment the mask comes forward and I am seen and I want to be part of a society, then I need to figure out a way of being. But I always feel guilty because that's not my nature. So it was all like all those things happening at the same time. And I remember trying to find, I had moved also from London to Montreal, where I lived some months, and then back to Mexico. But I had lived abroad so many years that I didn't really know anyone here. So I thought maybe I could meet other performers and start playing with this idea. And when I did, I just felt like, sure, but then it's like a very structured way of representation. Like it's almost as it's a play. And you have these two characters and what happens in their life. And I felt like, no, but really what we all go through is so much subtle and yet terrifying, and you're always walking on a tightrope. And I'm not feeling that at all when I'm playing with someone else. So how can I also reflect that sense of the unknown to an audience? So I thought, oh, maybe I can have someone to play with me that I don't know at all. And that I can be surprised, because how can you manage, like, if clowning is also all about surprises and provocations rather than directions, how do you create all the provocations? Like, of course, in your internal world, I'm sure you can reach them. But it's more powerful, I guess, to have someone else to tell you in silence, so here I am. And I felt like that was such, like, I love it. I love discovering people that way.
And that was sounds like it was an aha moment when you were creating the piece that you knew that one of the major other character on stage would be someone you have never met or spoken to, but someone in the audience who you'd bring up. And it is would Gabby Munoz, would you go up to someone you don't know in a restaurant and just start a conversation with them, or does the character of Chula embolden you to do something so brave as to pluck someone from an audience of 200 and get them on stage? And it's not improv because what happens is set, but you need to guide them through it incredibly skillfully and I would say very sympathetically. I've seen audience participation, for lack of a better term, where I worry that it's going to be embarrassing or
Awful.
and it's not that at all. It's very it's very sympathetic, and you feel like you are in control of everything.
I try to think of it as inviting someone to my living room. So I would never bring someone to my house to make fun of them or be a a-hole, basically. No, you just tend to serve something to drink, have a good talk, have a good laugh, make that person feel comfortable, whoever that person is, even if I don't, that's the first time I see that I've seen that person. So it's always thinking of, okay, it's inviting someone into your living room.
I can't remember at what point in the performance it is that you choose the person who's going to come, or you invite them to come. But in the mo in the time leading up to that moment, you are, for all intents and purposes, working. You're doing the performance. Are you scanning? Are you listening for laughter? Are you looking for any kind of physical communication from someone, like crossed arms, or how do you become so sensitive to the audience while also doing the show that you feel you can choose someone? I found that fascinating when I was watching. I was thinking, like, how did she know that that was, because the night that I saw it, everything went super, super smoothly, and I'm sure it must go off the rails sometimes. You've done the show so much. But how do you, tell me how you choose so well.
It comes from maybe my early stages as a clown, or my approach to clowning, which was social clowning. And I think that really taught me something about how to trust my instinct into connecting with others. Because I knew, like, I remember going to India and going to a place to as a clown, and I got there and the very, very young kids were crying and they were terrified. They were so scared. And I was there with another friend of mine, another clown friend. And we were both really trying our best to make that episode a little less scary for everyone. And until we understood that what just like a very tiny, like a very brief encounter made the whole episode change. So we just basically touched a kid with our fingers, and that was the game. That was it. Then the rest started to feel a little bit more secure and comfortable, and they started approaching and coming closer. And by the end, but that was the game. So I guess with that, I also started understanding there's not much I need to do. And there's so many actions as a clown, and because. Or a mime, because we think our tool of using dialogue and using words and our voices is cut. Then with our actions, people won't understand what we are really wanting to tell them. So we overdo many times. And I sort of figured out it was pretty much the opposite. So I started doing quite very little, and also to be able to listen to what the audience was giving me, or how I felt every performance. I'm very conscious of how I'm feeling on stage. There's sometimes that I feel sadder than others or funnier than others, and I need to contact to be in touch with that channel, saying, okay, so tonight you're going to be very gentle with yourself because you're feeling a little bit weird.
Let's talk about your most recent show, Dirt. It seems to be undoing some of the aspects of what you were talking about with Chula Gabby Gabby Chula. And if I just read a bit of the show text, it says it's a show about the things we wish to hide behind false identities, clothes, and labels, removing the layers of imposed social stereotypes. Can you tell me a bit more about Dirt?
So this show started with the idea of delayering. I don't know if that's a word in English, but of taking layers and exposing, revealing who we are. It then became clear. I really liked the idea of working with camouflage and with things we want to show or to be part of, like this table of mess. That if nobody really speaks out or shows their who they really are, we can all be part of that table of mess. So it's, I guess it's also about authenticity and originality, which I don't think any of it exists really. Everything has been done and done and done and done, overdone, but definitely it's a way of how you put the magnifying glass on things. It's your eye that will see this beautiful cosmos that we really have inside us, but we hide behind so many layers of, I don't know, of what society wants us to be. And without even knowing, we are playing that game. So I did this show, I premiered the show when I was at my fattest. Like in terms of my body shape, I was really like big, and I wanted also to show my body and to say like, okay, so now if I'm really delayering and taking, I really want to be bold and make that statement of, I am so much more than just this, or as my female shape, I'm so much more than that. And only by really unraveling and getting rid of all of this, I'll make sure I can understand a little bit better the whole experience of being alive. That has nothing to do with shape or form or our heads or intellect or any of that, but really to be able to be free and to dance naked and experience life. Like that. I don't know if it makes sense.
It does. Is it a show that you could have made 10 years ago? Because I find as women, as we get older, we are more comfortable with the way we look, or maybe we just care less. I'm more comfortable with our weaknesses and our strengths. Do you think that you had to be where you are in your life now to make Dirt?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I feel much more comfortable and secure as a woman, but also as an artist. I feel like what I'm saying has some sort of impact in others. And I found this particular piece, which also confronted me with many things in me, which was absolutely fantastic. But it really resonated both again with men and women. Although I feel like in the three shows I've done, it's definitely the most feminist in a way, or feminine. Funny enough, the dialogue it had also with men, and in Mexico, where there's such a macho culture, and I've been bullied so many times. For my physique, it was also wonderful to see how men feel seeing someone voluptuous and big on stage. Like I do fake nudes. I'm not entirely naked, but I do play lots with my sexuality, and it was lovely to have many talks with men, saying like, "Wow." Wow, thanks for that. I'm taking that as a positive note.
Lastly, I want to talk about some of the workshops you've given in areas of conflict. For example, Palestine, you've mentioned India, and also I think in Mexico City, I think you called it social clowning. And you co-founded a company called Clown Meean. and you've worked as a volunteer with Clowns Without Borders USA. Can you tell me a bit about your work in that sphere?
So I started, when I started clowning, I started with a friend from Lebanon, another clown called Sabine Shuger. I came back, as I told you earlier on, I moved from London to Montreal, then came back to Mexico. And I didn't really know much of the industry or how to get in, or I didn't know anyone. And at the same time in Lebanon, the war started in Beirut. And so Sabine, my friend, called up and she told me, I can't take war again in my life. I cannot stay here. Can I come over to Mexico? And I was like, sure. I mean, I'm not doing anything here. I'm also lost. And yeah, sure. So she came over and we started developing this clown workshops. And we bought a secondhand car and drove around the Gulf of Mexico. And we started doing workshops with kids and taking them out of schools and going to visit them at school and all of this. And suddenly we found like, okay, so this is having a very positive response in their community. There's also like, we are affecting the community, but we're also allowing ourselves to be affected by them. So then when she left, she told me, I think you should come to Beirut, to the Middle East, and let's develop our program a little bit more. So I did, and we started touring with a Palestinian festival called Ajana, and we went all over, and it was so powerful. And I think that's what I said earlier on also, like, I think that's what marked really my way of approaching performing arts and why I do what I do. It's definitely how it's more important to me to feel affected by others than only to say, so I'm there to perform and show my talent, but I want to find something in life that shakens me. And I want to shake the others, because I don't want to be numb. I don't want to live life half asleep, half awake, and not understanding the life of others. And that's something that was given to me with this community and social clowning. So since there, we started doing it with our pocket money. And it was such an easy time where you just had very little money and no care whatsoever. We just go and do very different times. yeah, oh my. And then Clowns Without Borders came along, and it felt also like a more structured platform to continue. But they approached us and they said, we heard about you, we started looking at what you're doing, and we would love to blend and do fuse and do something together. And they had the know-how and the platform of how to do it better than we did. So we started.
So was there a piece that changed everything for you?
Yep. There are two pieces, I think. While I was studying in London, I saw a show by Robert Wilson called The Black Rider. And I was still very new. I had not found yet physical theater and that universe. I was still doing classical theater. And when I saw this, I was like, oh my God, I want to do this. That looks like completely down my alley of interest. I love it. And it was a collaboration between Tom Waits and Jean-Paul Gaultier, and Marianne Faithfull was singing live. It was just like, an explosion of wonderfulness. But I would also have to say the Bible, which in a way I'm not religious at all, but I studied Latin American literature. And I remember when we had to study the Bible, and we had a nun as a teacher. And my prejudice straight away went like, oh my God, this is going to be long. This is not going to be very interesting for me. And it turned out to be amazing. And it was not about educating or being a deductive thing of saying like, so I would, you should believe in Jesus Christ or whatever. It was from a narrative and a storytelling angle. And I think, like, the text itself, maybe not, but just that switch of prejudice of saying, like, there's so many angles to tell a story or to approach something and to see, to have critical eyes in this sort of work, that was given to me by that text.
That's intriguing. That's a great answer. Well, this might have answered the next question, but is there a piece that you might not have loved but had value for you? So it could be something that you see as like a noble failure. It could be a guilty pleasure. It could be some like a piece you're involved in that you hated, but in retrospect, it was good.
I thought also about the Bible. But then by reading it, I was really fascinated by many stories. And seeing how, but it happens to me also with Shakespeare, I guess. I find it quite difficult. And I'm very visual, so I love imagining. I need to have somebody that narrates basically visually for me to enter their universe. And if I don't really understand, then of course I can't really access that world. So with Shakespeare, it happens the same. But then I have really been touched many times by it on stage and seeing it and feeling how amazingly relevant this is nowadays. How come it hasn't lost its importance and relevance, basically? Yeah, so how actual it is. And I love that.
And would you like to nominate another artist that we should check out?
I would say a visual artist, a Mexican visual artist called Floria González. She is amazing. She's also very, very dark, and yet so sweet. It's just a very lovely mix of something that's very easy to enter and to reach and to touch, but with so much complexity behind. She has taken lots of my photos, especially for Dirt. She worked with me on the images of Dirt. She's amazing. So she's very, very sensitive, but also quite a weirdo, very strange being. So I love her. I love her her colors.
Floria Gonzalez's website is www.floriagonzalez.com, or you could find her on Instagram at Floria Gonzalez. You can find out more about Gabby and see some of her beautiful photography on Instagram at Chula the Clown or on her website www.chulatheclown.com. Okay, closing credits. This has been a Makeshift Company production. Follow us on Instagram at Makeshift Company or check out our website makeshiftcompany.com, where there is a link to the podcast website for show notes. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. Also, if you rate and review the show, it would be most appreciated. Thanks for listening. And now, from the cutting room floor, I give you...
of these artists feel nowadays, knowing that they became huge, like Frida Kahlo. Should be like, yeah. Really, man?
Yeah, she's more famous than her husband nowadays,
exactly.
Right?